Hi, this is the Tempter Podcast, Innovation at the Edge with Open Source. Today, we're going to look back on 2025, talk about what we did, some things we've observed and experienced. So, hi, Kim. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Cliff.
So, 2025 was another good year. And, in technology, a lot has changed, a lot of new opportunities. Yeah, a lot of things kind of shifting. Probably the biggest thing we observed was the AI has really taken hold in our code generation and in a lot of other automation. So what are your thoughts looking back on what, how has AI changed your life, Kim?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, in the sense when we started, probably, you know, I maintain a lot of scripts, a lot of automation through scripts, you know, a lot of, maintenance tasks that I do. That's kind of my version of AI, which was kind of acting on my behalf through, you know, maybe some sort of, I would say, like, limited, you know, brain power that I was offloading there, and they were being triggered, you know, at certain points, some workflows. And I think I was watching very carefully and very interestingly, you know, a lot of things, especially in coding area, developed over in 2025, mm-hmm. and very rapidly got adopted and then developed even more and became good at stuff.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you'll talk about more on, you know, the tools side of things, but, you know, some of those, you know, command line based approaches are very, very fundamental, because a lot of developers associate heavily to the terminal, and having chat boxes are fine, but if you can be, you know, alongside on the terminal with the developer, that is far more productive.
Yes,
and I think that probably has been a thing that I observed towards the end of this 2025, that's become possibility from, you know, all the big LLM counterparts, that there was a command line agent that was being made available. So yeah, a lot has happened. I mean, I've adopted my ways of, you know, utilizing them as a supporter, you know, so I delegate certain tasks to it and try to prompt it in you know, doing things I want. I don't use it in agentic mode, but I use it as a co-software developer, you know, basically takes something, does some work
mm-hmm.
that I can audit.
Yeah, it's really amazing if we think back. You know, a lot of things came to life in 2025, like Cloud Code. I believe that was introduced in early 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd asked me at the start of the year, you know, like, is AI coding going to be a thing? I was very skeptical. But what happened was, I was working with a young engineer at one of my clients, and he was really pushing the AI coding thing with Cursor at the time. So I kind of decided, well, I need to see what's going on here, and just to be able to keep up with this young guy.
Hmm.
So I tried different things, but eventually I landed on Cloud Code. And again, this is just a terminal application, so there's no IDE or anything. You basically run it in the terminal, and you tell it to do stuff, and it's running commands like ls and grep and tree and awk and sed, and you know, it's pretty low level, you know, and it's just doing mm-hmm. Unixy stuff right on the terminal, much more advanced than anything I'd ever do. So you know, it's super good at writing bash scripts or Ansible scripts, Docker mm-hmm. files, I mean, stuff like that. It can just do amazingly well, get it right the first time.
Yeah.
Whereas writing a bash script, for me, to get it right the first time is a pretty rare thing, you know, because it's kind of a tedious language to program in. But yeah, it seemed like that went real well. And then, or I'd say the last quarter of the year, you know, with the new models, with Opus 4.5 from Anthropic and the latest Gemini and OpenAI models, I think the consensus in the industry is we really kind of turned the curve on AI coding. Mm-hmm. And these models are getting pretty good. So I found them really useful. It's, yeah. And I've, one thing I really enjoy doing is using it for things other than coding, like my daily newsletter, my daily blog. You know, I use AI to proofread it, to automatically add the emoji, add tags, and I even use it now to generate images, a little diagram with each post.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it generates the diagram in draw.io format. So they're pretty consistent from post to post, the style and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I could talk a long time, and I think we want to do a dedicated episode just on AI coding in the future. So I should probably just be quiet. I could go on a long time with.
Yeah, I think you've done a lot. I've seen you kind of like utilize it, you know, as a productivity tool in very different capacities and in a very unique ways. And, you know, I read a lot about how people are using it or doing things with it. And, you know, so what I've seen you do from close quarters is quite unique, I think. And there might be something in there for folks to learn. And you know, your comment about scripts is, you know, something that I utilize too, you know, because a lot of times I basically automate, you know, a certain task immediately. Mm-hmm. And that is not gone, you know. I just basically don't do that anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. I just delegate it, and I get like pretty good scripts to do that little thing I wanted to do, and then, yeah, I just put it on the site and let it run. And mm-hmm. I think it has freed up a lot of that time to do other things, you know, which are, yeah, more, they require more attention. Mm-hmm. So I think there certainly is a shift in the focus that I've observed in my day-to-day work.
Yeah. One thing I did create, which I'll just mention here, is a Claude Code plugin called Doc-Driven Development. And over the year, I've kind of settled on a flow where I write the docs, I have Claude write the plan, I review the plan, and then I have Claude generate the code from that. So yeah, you can look that up. I'll leave a link in the show notes, but mm-hmm. Doc-driven development,
yeah,
is a workflow that, because one thing, you know, we kind of look at AI as a new compiler. So if you have a compiler, it's very important to have the inputs to the compiler captured, because, you know, if you, yeah, want to change something, you want to change the inputs, not just recreate the inputs. And that's why I feel like versioning the documents and the plan, and then having the AI tool run from that versus just kind of randomly prompting, mm-hmm, is important if you're doing code generation.
Right. Yeah. So what are the other things that you observed in 2025 besides AI?
Yeah, we did a lot with Zephyr. So that's, mm-hmm, been a very pleasant experience. And again, Zephyr, you know, this all kind of dovetails together, but Zephyr works amazingly well with AI for several reasons. One, it's a command line driven workflow. Secondly, the Zephyr core code and all the BSPs are just Git repos right alongside your application code. You know, they're all in different repos, and they have a tool called WES that organizes everything. But the important thing is all the context is there in an easy to navigate, easy to find way. Mm-hmm. So instead of like asking a cloud thing, Zephyr questions, and it kind of has to just go off cloud information. It can actually look at the entire context of your Zephyr build, all of the source code, and do a much better job at figuring things out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the biggest problems with AI is context. How do you give it context? And if you can, if you work in an environment where the context is easily accessible, then it will do a much better job. And Zephyr is that versus a GUI-driven MCU development tool where the core stuff is hidden off somewhere and
mm-hmm.
some obscure directory where the developer doesn't even know where it is, let alone the AI tool.
Right, yeah. So, I think so. Zephyr is probably heading towards what I said was, you know, nobody will write anymore RATOS anymore.
Yeah, it will be the standard. Very confident in that. So,
yeah. Probably 2026 will just stamp it even more, hopefully.
Yeah. And if, you know, I probably err a little too far this way, but MCUs are so cheap, you can easily buy an MCU for very little money that'll run Zephyr. So why not? Is my
I think we added Jetson support to your distro, and you know, that's been a very pleasant experience as well. It's quite complex BSP if you look at it, but it's done well. So we basically were able to integrate that into as a one of the reference platforms into your distro, and not only integrate that but also add the OTA, which is Swapdate based. So that was like a very good experience to see it. There were a few changes in between where the formats changed, and some of the Swapdate content needed to be placed here and there, but those were minor. If you stayed on tip of the tree, then getting those changes, adopting yourself, wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason why it wasn't because Yo is a rolling release model, and we basically experienced these problems way before. If you were a time-based release, then there might be a lot of things that built on top, so the change might not be as simple. But at least for us, what I saw was it was a small change in the stride. I think being able to run a lot of workloads, I've done some comparisons with like other operating systems, and it has stood tall, and the Yo distro generated workloads have been impeccable, performant. And we even shifted to use bring your own kernel. So essentially we were not using the kernel that comes with the L4T. We started using upstream kernel based on Linux Yocto, and that worked flawlessly as well for moving forward. So it's pretty good.
It just seems like the Metatagra works well with the Yo rolling release model, because Metatagra, they keep the tip pretty good shape, and an upstream first type development methodology. So I really, really encourage that workflow. I listened to a talk with a kernel developer the other day, Greg, I forget his last name, but anyway, he's the maintainer of the stable branches, and he said, we don't accept any changes into the stable branch unless they land in upstream first. And I just thought that was a very interesting point, that's the way to do things, so you're sure things make it upstream and they don't get dropped, or you don't face this huge mountain of technical debt later trying to push things upstream.
I think try it out. We do have Nano as well, as well as HEX Orion. So both of them, they work well. And perhaps, you know, when the new board we get hands-on for, we might add that too.
Yeah, so Kim mentioned we have SwapDate, so that's a way to update, you know, just copy an image to the device, run SwapDate, it'll reboot, update itself, so that way we have built-in update functionality. We also have it set up with a classic rootfs and then separate data partition. So the idea is a data partition never gets touched, but we continually update the rootfs partitions. So that's something you'll probably need if you're going to build a product, but that's something that Kim has already figured out and set up, and it's ready to go.
Yeah, I think these things are something that should be in the backbone, rather not a afterthought.
OTA
should be the first thing you lay down along with your, you know, other infrastructures. So
yeah, proper partitioning and so on.
They are very hard to change, you know, even later in the development stages, let alone in the field.
So while we're on Yo, we may as well finish going over that. But one thing we started doing is migrating to CAS. So we had a new contributor that did most of the CAS development for us, and it's looking really good. So we're hoping to be a little more mainstream with supporting CAS workflows in the near future.
Yeah, and I think it kind of dovetailed nicely into our project approach. And it kind of provides more structure, even though, like, you know, the project-based approach was still using a shellish syntax, so it still had some structure to it. But CAS gives you a lot better way to represent, you know, your overall project definitions, and the way it inherits things. You know, you can create like common pieces and then, you know, build a project fairly quickly and inherit, you know, an existing project into a newer project pretty quickly. So I think it really was that I was seeing that, you know, there is a one-to-one translation here, and I'm using it these days, you know, work. And and yeah, I think it's basically here to stay, I think. You know, it's essentially maybe, you know, the project-based approach will abandon in future, hopefully, you know, when everybody starts using CAS and nobody remembers the project-based approach.
Yeah, it served us well, but we're looking forward to a more composable experience with Yo to be able to easily integrate with the stuff that
One of the things we do with Yo is we always want to, you know, integrate things that are best, you know, that are kind of being used widely in the community, and we want to know why they are. And, you know, if they fit the Yo philosophy and it comes in, so we just don't shy away from that sort of changes if need be. So
it's designed to be a good template, a good starting point for real product development. This isn't this isn't demoware. This is this is what you want, a good sane defaults and good tooling. So that's what we strive for.
Yeah, so you did a lot of work on tool side, not only in 2025, you always do, but in 2025, there were, you know, few tools that we adopted that, you know, to enhance our workflows, but then there were tools that you wrote to fulfill your workflows. So talk through those, you know, and then we'll go over, you know, what the experiences were.
Yeah, I would say, as far as tools I started using, Helix was the big one for me. I can't remember if I started that before, but the Helix text editor, it's similar to Vim in that it's a command, separate command and authoring modes. It's largely compatible, but there's a few differences where they try to make it a little more intuitive. But Helix has been a great experience. I highly recommend it if you want a Vim-like experience, but just a little less setup. You know, it comes out of the box working just pretty well. The customizations you need are very small. And what really made this possible was the proliferation of language servers. So before, it would take a lot of custom tooling to support each language, and everybody did things differently. But with the standardization of language servers, Helix has gone all in on that. So all you need is language servers, and then everything just works. So it's been a good thing. The other tool I've started using is the yadm.filemanager. So this builds on top of Git, and it just has a little bit of nice things that make it nice for managing your dot files. So as far as new tools off the shelf, have you picked up anything, Ken?
Yeah, I think Helix, certainly, you know, mm-hmm. I've been toying around with that, and my take was, you know, I need to open huge files, and you know, I was looking for something that is not a simple notepad, but you know, it's kind of a rich editor, and I can run a lot of, you know, commands.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to use NVIM, and I had, like, as you said, like a lot of plugins, you know, to work with it, and a lot of like and all those plugins are awesome, but when you have like these huge files, and it would take like ton of time to open them, or sometimes it won't even open. So Helix kind of gave me that. You know, that was one way I started using it, and then
instant startup.
Right. Yeah, and then I've been kind of used to it by now, where, you know, my aliases for VI are pointing to Helix now.
Oh, so that's a big step.
Yeah. So you know, because I think you have like, you know, muscle memory, and you mm-hmm. end up typing whatever editor you have in your mind. So I just created a alias to point to Helix. So
yeah,
at this point of time, I think it's a done deal.
Yeah. A couple other honorable mentions. I'll just throw out the Yazzy file manager. That's, mm-hmm. that's incredible. Lazy Git is amazing.
Yep.
And of course, LEJ. We've probably talked about these in previous podcasts, but
still continuing with them. Yeah.
Yeah, this stack of tools really makes for a very fast and efficient terminal development environment.
And I started using new shell, right? So new is very interesting. I'm still a toddler, so mm-hmm. I don't have it as my default shell yet. I'm still starting to play with it. So I play with it sometimes, get stuck, and move back to Z shell. Mm-hmm. That's the stage I'm in, so I don't have much to share as of now.
Yeah, I'm a laggard in that space. So new shell is the one where everything's like a table output, and then that makes it super easy to parse it and pipe it into new tools and all that. Yeah, that's
pretty neat. Especially I think with the AI, you know, you need to process kind of like data, you know, mm-hmm. kind of outputs. It's super cool.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the syntax compatibility, you know, Bash or other shells. So that's kind of a jump. I'm trying to kind of see if I can have a mechanism to, you know, still invoke. Maybe once we kind of start using TAS, you know, I don't need any mm-hmm. Bash or GSH anymore as much as I do now. So,
yeah, because our current Yo workflow is very dependent on a huge mm-hmm. Bash script, you know, that does a lot. So, yeah.
Right. So then you wrote some tools as well. So, I think we'll reserve your experiences of using AI for them, but let's talk about what those tools were. And I think, and then I'll also say I'm user of them as well, some of them.
Yeah. So the big one for me was a tool called B-Run. And mm-hmm. B-Run is it's kind of like GitHub Actions or Ansible, but it's designed to run local workflows without containers. And you may ask, like, oh, why would you want to do that? Containers are the future. But when you're building Yocto images, you don't necessarily want containers. You want to just simply leverage the power of your workstation sitting under your desk. And there just didn't seem to be a good way to really just run a native workflow in kind of a configurable way. So I created brun, and it's a YAML config. It looks a lot like GitHub Actions or Ansible. And it has a bunch of tasks, and you chain these tasks together. There's a success, an always, and a failure action at the end of each task, and then you can chain that to the next task. So tasks are kind of chained. So I use it currently to run my Yocto builds for a number of different platforms. And then it has an email task where it'll email me the results. And also we have it connected with notify.shell. And that way I can get notifications on my phone as well.
And I'm a user of it. And, you know, because how it helps me is, you know, a lot of times there are patches that I queue up. And obviously, you know, I need to test them and do other stuff with them before I push them out to CI and other things. So I have brun sitting there watching my repository. And when I make the change, it starts the build behind the scenes. And then I can leave my desktop or keep working on that one. And then email pops up saying, oh, it succeeded. And then, you know, this is like super helpful for me, you know, essentially to vet out the changes pretty quickly. And what I've seen is, you know, these little things, they basically clutter your mind. Every step you take away, you know, is a huge benefit for concentrating on the task at hand. So, you know, so right now, for example, I don't worry about build at all. So I just keep editing, keep changing. And then I'm done. I push it to a local branch or something. And then it's watching that and it builds it. And then, you know, it's something you might say it's one command less, but, you know, the amount of cognitive switch you do is huge, because sometimes you're running to fetch, you know, some groceries or something, which could be an hour. But then you forgot to run your command, and you
know, now you're an hour behind. So
behind, and these builds are long sometimes, depending on the changes. So now all that is gone. You know, I just get
You don't carry the context in your head now. Like, do I need to go back and check if that build succeeded or not? And
a huge change for me, actually.
Yeah, that's great to hear. It's working for you. So one of the little bit of polishes we added was, like, when we email, we can specify we want to send the last 30 lines of the log.
Right.
And because we have success and failure outputs, like for brun, if it succeeds, I just send a success message. I don't want the log cluttering up my brun notification, my notify shell notifications. But if it fails, I want to see the last 30 lines of the log to know what failed. So those are just like the little things you can do.
Yeah.
To really streamline and make efficient the notifications and stuff you're getting.
Yeah. So awesome. So I think you wrote another tool called HFID.
What is HFID? So HFID is kind of an idea on how to tag equipment. Or really anything where you want to be able to visualize easily, quickly and easily identify it in the field. And what we've learned over time with various IoT projects is like a 2D barcode or something, you know, you can't just go look at a device in the field and say, yep, that's it. You know, so the HFID is basically two sets of three characters. So it might be like AY6-ZAB, and these are random. And if you put a HFID on everything you produce and you deploy, it's just a very quick way to match things up. You know, if you have a portal and you're trying to match a device to the portal, or if you're installing equipment and you know that this device needs to go here, you can quickly pull it out of your box of stuff that you're going to install. So anyway, it was just kind of a little thing I needed for one of my customers, and it's now a website. Anybody can use it. It has an API. Just sign up and generate your HFIDs, even for lab equipment and things like that. You know, I can see a lot of uses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so moving on to some more tools, I think the doc-driven tools, I guess, that's probably another AI tool that you basically written for facilitating AI development.
Yeah, the doc-driven development Claude Code plugin. So we mentioned that a little bit earlier with the Claude AI coding, but yeah, that's another tool that I use every day now. And
yeah, we'll talk about it in some of the future episodes. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah.
So other things around your toolings, around your desktops or your, so I know that I played with tiling desktops,
mm-hmm.
and I played with Hyperland on Arch, and I've stuck with it.
Yeah.
And, I'm not going away from KDE at all, but, on some of my machines, which are more not like laptop-ish, they are pretty static, like desktop or something that don't change. I'm using it. I started using it just for as a thin layer on my build machine, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I didn't want to spend, 1 or 2 gigabytes of RAM just running a fancy, environment that I'm not using actively. And so I started using it, and it's pretty fancy actually, with like mm-hmm. very less memory. And
so let me get this right. So Amachi or Hyperland uses less memory than KDE?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Quite less.
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course, you have your applications, which are the ones which take the most, but mm-hmm. Depending on what you do, like if you're opening Alacrity shell and terminal and, a few other things and a browser, then browser will be like the one that'll take the most memory, and doesn't matter which DM you are on. But but if you are doing a build, you don't have a browser on it, usually. So, it's good to kind of have that memory saved for running the builds,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time have some access on the screen as well. So but it's been a good experience. I've played with tiling desktops in the past, like i3, all that, but mm-hmm. This one was the longest I've kept around, and I think I'm still playing with it. It's right now, I would say it's like, more common for me than KDE is. So I use mm-hmm. it more, but I use both of them interchangeably.
Sure.
Depending on which computer I'm on.
Yeah. And that's a nice thing with Arch Linux, is you can just select on login which mm-hmm. which environment you want to use. So it's a nice OS to transition or try different things, and then you can gradually transition over time.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this Amachi distro. It was started by DHH mm-hmm. in 2025, and this is a significant event for Arch Linux mm-hmm. because it really put Arch on the map as a viable alternative to Mac OS for just your standard software developer.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, I'm on. Subscribe to the release emails for Amachi, and it is just amazing the level of development that's gone into this. There's a lot of contributions.
Yeah.
So I tried it for a while. I just installed it on top of my laptop, existing Arch distribution. It worked. But it's pretty opinionated, and it probably isn't the best fit for an experienced Linux developer who already has opinions on how things should be.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would probably advise just go with straight Hyperland and skip the Amachi. But if you're new to Linux, I think Amachi would be a good way to get started in Linux.
Yeah,
So.
I think that's a good suggestion there. I didn't try actively, but I think if you install it fresh, I think it gives you that opinionated environment, right? But if you try to kind of take a vanilla Arch distribution and then try to kind of slap it on top yourself, I don't know how that would, because it's a full experience, right? So it has a very different purpose than somebody who is kind of cobbling together their distribution like I do.
It
So,
wants to take over and it has
yeah.
opinions on how things should be done. So
Correct.
it's kind of like
Yeah.
Rails. I mean, DHH did both of them. They're both very opinionated, good at what they do, but
Yeah.
you do things their way,
Yeah.
so.
So if you're a user of Linux, and I think it's a fantastic distro for that, like you do something using Linux, right? It just unleashes the power of Linux to you behind the scenes in a very polished way. And I think I really think that's a void that it is filling in very nicely. So, but tiling desktops are back. That's awesome.
And Hyperland is pretty neat.
Yeah, I think it's remains to be seen, but I think I know there are a lot of Arch-based distros out there too, and I'm just thinking that the rolling release is rolling as well into future. So
Yeah,
we'll
the
see.
other change, we don't have it on our list here, but we've been running Arch on one of our main servers, and that's been a really nice experience. So continues to go well. Had one little hiccup, but it took me 15 minutes to fix. Other than that, it's been great.
Yeah, and that's the good thing about those hiccups. I think they are small and they are manageable, then we are good, I guess, and maybe a little bit of backup for the configuration. If you kind of like partition the system well, all your important data is kind of not on the machine. Perhaps it is on a different partition or something like that. I guess that goes a long way, but you would do those kind of things with any distro, I would imagine. So
And you really want it scripted with Ansible or something so that you can rebuild the machine in a half a day if you need to. Anything else, I've never had a cloud machine fail on me yet, like a Linode or a DigitalOcean, knock on wood, but if it does, everything's in Ansible and we can rebuild it in half an hour and or I mean half a day and be up and running. So you don't want golden machines. So
Oh,
that's
yeah.
yeah.
So some of the habits that we developed is writing dailies, and I think you hooked me onto it, and
Yeah, how's that been going for you, Cam?
it's been going well. I mean, while we speak, I haven't done it for the past couple of days, but that's been just 2 days in, I've had almost 280 plus posts, so I think that's not bad. I didn't take it too harsh on me that that I would write it. I'll take it a day at a time, and it's become like a good habit. And regardless if I don't publish or I publish, I still write. So that's actually really a good habit, and I think it also provides some clarity on larger topics. So I process thoughts around developer productivity, technical debt, and physical AI. And I think over days you get a lot more crystal clear ideas about how we are thinking about it. So I think it's a self-learning tool for me.
I really enjoyed reading your posts over the last year. And we started this in 2024, so we've managed to hold this practice all through 2025, which is a good accomplishment.
Yeah, I think you
And
started a bit ahead of me, and then I think I kind of joined a bit
yeah, not
later.
much. July and August is what I'm seeing here, so of 2024. But Yes, some people are very hesitant to subscribe to a daily email newsletter, but you know, these are quick reads, a couple minutes, and I would categorize these as mostly inspiration. Like when I read Kim's posts, it's inspiring, gives me a little bit to think about. It's not really something that consumes my time, and they're also good conversation. Well, like I'm subscribed to probably a dozen email newsletters from people I really like their ideas. And one thing that's really neat is if you just reply to them, people really appreciate that, you know, getting a little bit of feedback. It's not a burden. I've really gotten to know some really neat people this way. And it seems like it's a much more, there's more depth than just like messaging something on LinkedIn where there's so much noise and, you know, it's a little bit deeper.
Engagement,
Engagement, but yet it's not time consuming. It's very, very low time commitment. Again, I feel these are mostly inspirational thoughts versus like deep study thoughts. You know, it's just like, oh yeah, that's how can I do that? So
yeah, I think that's well put, and hope to continue it. I think as I said, like, you know, it's kind of processing your own thoughts as well. So I think it's a good practice that I'm very proud of.
If anybody's interested, we'd love to have more subscribers and more feedback on what we're thinking about. So,
and start your dailies too.
You know? Right. Let us know where they're at, and I will subscribe.
Yep. So I think there was, BSPs in embedded Linux is always an interesting topic, and there's been always that talk about how, you know, vendor kernels and vendor this and vendor that.
Mm-hmm.
And what progress did you see in 2025 in embedded Linux BSPs?
Yeah, I've probably the thing that I'm most glad for or thankful to see is a number of people came out and really encouraged people to clean up the BSPs. You know, there's been presentations at large conferences. There's been posts on LinkedIn. There's been other communications. I know several of our guests on the Tempter podcast last year talked about this very thing, BSP quality. Mm-hmm. And it really came out strong, you know, the struggles people are having with these BSPs that are forked off old versions of Yocto, don't get updated. And really the industry is recognizing the necessity that vendors keep up. They do it upstream first and really help their customers by keeping up with recent releases. Anyway, you're much tighter integrated. What have you seen here?
Yeah, I think it's call outs from folks who are shipping products, right? So it's something that you do today, right? And then you feel like, okay, we basically released it on whatever the current LTS is. But what happens is, like, literally by the time somebody ships a product out of it, you know, it's probably a year later or something like that. So the activity in a lot of them ceases the moment the release is made. And that's where I think, you know, it starts to get stale. And then, you know, they ship it and then suddenly, you know, they need some CVE fixes or stuff from, or maybe a kernel bump or other things. And now, you know, they don't have it. If it is there, it's not tested, or they do it on their own. If the more of upstream first approach happened, then, you know, you would basically have a very different roadmap for supporting this. And it just percolates down the chain. So I think, you know, the product lines that are way behind, you know, they will not be because, you know, there is one less thing for them to worry about. And what happens is, like, technical debt, I call it, you know, that gets collected over time, right? So it's not just BSPs, but when you are putting a product together at the very end, you know, they are basically a aggregator of, you know, everybody's technical debt.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, sometimes we kind of falsely accuse them of, like, say, why are you shipping that board with that old blah and old this? But the problem is they are dependent upon their supply chain, which is feeding them, mm-hmm. you know, that piece of component. And so I think I see that as a reflection of the process. And
yeah.
And it is improving, you know, in certain cases. You know, there's been a call out on one of the Yocto project dev days about BSPs, you know, exactly in the same vein and with examples.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then some suggestions on to, like, hey, how you could kind of help out here, because, you know, certainly there will be problems when you do this, right? So, but I guess if you figure out a process, that goes a long way. So more awareness, I think, you know, compared to 2024, certainly yeah. in this area. And a recognition of this also from, you know, a lot of participants in the community into, you know, say, hey, let's not generate this technical debt. What can we do to not do it? So I think we are starting this year in a good footing that hopefully 2026 we'll see a lot better.
Yeah.
In this area.
Yes. This one change I feel could make a huge difference for Yocto as being a more viable solution yeah. for product development. And
yeah,
it's really nice that the people actually building products, their voices are starting to be heard
mm-hmm.
versus just the vendors providing the Linux support. It's a different game.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done for the last 20 years. So I felt the pain, definitely.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, the attention hopefully results into some actions in 2026 right. is my summary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think that was, you know, 2025 in nutshell. And it's been a good year in terms of, you know, all the great things we learned a lot, you know, and hopefully 2026 will be in similar vein. So,
yeah, wish you the best. And all our listeners, appreciate you listening, sharing feedback, and please reach out if you have any thoughts. So,
thank you.
Thank you.